Greetings once again from Denver, Colorado, the city right here in the middle of it all. You may have heard the news. But stand by now for the worldview. That's right, it is the Weekly Worldview, and I am your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back to the show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, but we do focus on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. And hello, Alexis. Welcome to the Worldview Studios. Today is Alexis' birthday. Now, we're still at the point here with Alexis where we have a birthday every month. So today's the 17th. She's 9 months old. 9 months old, so you do the math. Try to figure out when Alexis' birthday was. And if you can figure it out, you will win... What? You could come and babysit Alexis, maybe. It'd be a strict screening process for that. All right, you wouldn't win any actual prize, but you could prove that you've overcome your public education. If you can do the math and figure that out. Now, I want to... Yes, happy birthday, Alexis. She's gorgeous, I'll tell you what. Okay, let's... But seriously, folks. All right, I'm going to start. I want to start here in Colorado. Now, I moved to Colorado. When did we move to Colorado? 1992. Moved to Colorado in 1992. And when we first moved here, I noticed that there were an awful lot of Subarus. And initially, I chalked this up to the fact that a lot of people like to drive up to the mountains for skiing. And Subaru does make a full line of all-wheel drive vehicles. That's what I originally attributed it to because I was fairly naive at the time. Now I realize that it's not the all-wheel drive. Okay. Now, Colorado is a cesspool of political correctness. I mean a cesspool. We've got, we probably have here in Colorado per capita more coexist stickers on Honda Elements, Obama-Biden stickers on Priuses, and rainbow diversity stickers on Subarus than any state in the union. It's just a cesspool of political correctness. So you can imagine the outrage that occurred this past week, when Denver Public Schools announced their lunch menu in honor of the Right Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King. Let's see, I have a story here from Westward, which is the local pothead rag. It's free. And I believe the paper that they print Westward on is designed so that you can rip it out and roll doobies with it. So in Westward, Colorado's free newspaper, this past week, they tell us, Colorado was the first state to make Martin Luther King's birthday a holiday. And the annual marade, that's what we have here in Denver, they call it the marade. It's a combination march parade in his honor, according to Westward, is the largest MLK parade in the country. So how does Denver Public Schools mark the occasion? How are they going to mark the occasion of Martin Luther King Day? Well, by offering a lunch menu that features Southern-style chicken, collard greens, and sweet potatoes. Southern-style chicken. Now, those of us who are racially sensitive, we know what they mean by Southern-style chicken. They mean fried chicken. And there's an uproar that this was a racist menu put together by a racist over there at the Denver Public Schools. Last Friday, in fact, Denver Public Schools apologized for the menu, which they said, quote, was highly insensitive in light of certain hurtful stereotypes still harbored in parts of our society, unquote. So DPS apologized for the hurtful. I mean, I think if you look at this menu, the only one hurt here is the chicken, right? I mean, wouldn't you say? And let me ask this question. Does liking fried chicken make black people less equal or less human than other people? I mean, does eating corned beef make the Irish any less human? Does eating sushi make the Japanese any less human? Well, I mean, And let's face it, I would bet that if given a choice between corned beef, sushi, and fried chicken, the right Reverend Martin Luther King would take the fried chicken. I know I would. Does that make me a racist? You know, everyone on the left, all the leftists, they act so sensitive about race, but it's not because they're actually sensitive about race. They just like to lord it over others, the idea that they might be racist. They like to lord that over people in order to control them, in order to exercise political power. That's what it's really about. And I don't hear anybody crying for the chickens here. Although there may be a press release over at the PETA website that I missed. Perhaps someone is weeping for the chickens, who were really the only ones who should be offended by this menu, in my humble opinion. All right. Now let's move on to important news of the global culture. From the Itar Tass News Agency over in Mother Russia, Russia's Prime Minister Vladimir Putin has urged power engineering specialists to fix energy failures there in Russia without delay. Apparently, there's been rolling blackouts. They're entering into the cold season there in Russia. Despite global warming, it's still quite cold there this winter. And Putin wants to make sure that energy is delivered reliably to the Russian people. And he said in a press conference, quote, "In addition to the global warming challenges, we need to address global cooling effects, and to do so promptly." So, I mean, that's stupid, isn't it? I mean, we need to address global warming and global cooling. Has this guy been hanging out with Joe Biden? I mean, if so, if we could document that they've gotten together any time in the last 6 months, it could document my theory that just coming into contact with extremely stupid people can lower one's IQ permanently. Yeah. I mean, stupidity on this level, I mean, a Biden or an Al Gore level, it's like a virus. I mean, it can attach itself to you. It's like a parasite just sucking IQ points out your left ear. Anyway, so Putin is addressing global warming and global cooling, keeping all his bases covered there, as a deft and devious politician is wont to do there in the former Soviet Union. All right, now let's continue in the culture file, because I worry about the people, because I think that the general masses are fairly easily misled these days. I mean, look at global warming, for crying out loud. And most of society has bought into the entire, this whole evolutionary model of creation without a creator. So, I'm not going to say most people are stupid, okay? Most people are definitely not on Al Gore's or Joe Biden's level. But people can be easily misled, and there was a headline on Drudge this past week. It was from the Telegraph newspaper over in the United Kingdom. And it caused me to worry about the public school graduates, both in England and here in the United States. I'm concerned that many of the public school product around the world spent the weekend telling their friends that there's trees on Mars. Because there was a headline that says NASA photographs trees on Mars. But trees, you see, was in quotation marks. So as if to imply that we're not sure it was trees. But what are the odds that the average public school product, number one, understands what quotation marks around anything means, and number two, reads any further into the story than the headline? Anyway, if you read into the story, the images captured by NASA appear to show rows of dark conifers, in quotation marks, sprouting from the dunes and hills on the planet's surface, but the scene is actually an optical illusion. The photographs actually show sand dunes coated with a thin layer of frozen carbon dioxide or dry ice, less than 240 miles from the North Pole there on the planet Mars. So for all you public school students who've tuned in and thought there were trees on Mars over this entire weekend, you stand corrected. I can just hear Bill Clinton on the phone. "Yeah, baby. They found trees on Mars. You hear about that? Yeah, I sent that one up there. Yeah, uh-huh. Yeah, what are you doing tonight?" Anyway, you guys remember how Clinton, I think he used the whole water on Mars thing to try to pick up girls at some point in his august presidency. So perhaps he's trolling the high schools with that line over this past week. All right, now let's move on into news of the environment, not on Mars, but here on Earth. From WorldNet Daily, a report has been issued by U.S. researchers accusing government agencies of cherry-picking temperature readings used to assess global temperatures. And a series of embarrassing emails were released revealing what happened when a blogger dared to point out a mistake by a NASA climate scientist. Yeah, this new report is from a scientist named Joseph Diallo and was highlighted in a report on global warming on KUSI television there in the beautiful sunny San Diego. This comes, WorldNet Daily tells us, only weeks after the tumultuous ClimateGate email scandal in Britain erupted, proving top global warming scientists manipulated data there. Yeah, so the book is pretty much closed on global warming, wouldn't you think? I mean, at least among the intelligent among us. I mean, there's the ClimateGate emails from East Anglia, and then there's the bitter cold that has gripped the planet over the past 3 weeks. All of that combining to tell us that the book is closed on global warming. Turns out it was a big scam by the leftists. Yeah, after losing the communist revolution, they set their sights on the green revolution. And, well, anyone with half a brain just isn't buying it anymore. Okay, and not to imply that the Pope only has half a brain, let's go to Vatican City. Pope Benedict I went to public school. The 16th, Pope Benedict the 16th denounced the failure of world leaders to agree to a new climate change treaty in Copenhagen last month. He said that the world peace depends on safeguarding God's creation. Now, I don't mean to imply that Pope Benedict only has half a brain. Now, he is old. And perhaps he's just a bit behind on the news. Maybe he doesn't have a high-speed connection there at the Vatican, and he's not able to keep on top of things like this. Or maybe he's just got a busy schedule. But let me just get a memo off to the Pope in case he tunes into the worldview so he can be enlightened. Hey, Benedict, the Earth is round, the sun is at the center of the universe, and global warming is a hoax, okay? Just so you don't embarrass yourself at the next dinner party. Anyway, this story was from Yahoo News, from the Associated Press. They say Benedict has been dubbed the Green Pope. Does that make the AP racist to call him the Green Pope? I wonder how he feels about collard greens. Well, let's move on. We have more Pope news. More Pope news. Pope Benedict has called gay marriage laws an attack on the natural difference, the natural differences between men and women. Okay, Pope Benedict. He says gay marriage laws are an attack. What about homosexuality, Pope Benedict? I mean, do you really have to hedge so much that you're worried about gay marriage laws? Because what really underlies these gay marriage laws, Pope Benedict? It's homosexuality. And the homosexuals' agenda. Alexis, if you're going to contribute to the broadcast, you're going to have to bring more intellectually stimulating conversation than that, okay? All right? So when you're ready to enlighten us, just speak up. Now, where was I? Anyway, the Pope condemns homosexual marriage laws while avoiding the topic of homosexuality, and that just bothers me. At the end of an address in 2008, the Pope said the existence of gay people threatens humanity as much as the destruction of the rainforests, and that blurring genders through acceptance of transgender people would kill off the human race. Well, hey, that's pretty good, Pope Benedict. I can go with you on that line, okay? But attacking gay marriage laws without acknowledging the underlying corruption is simply to avoid the issue. But, Pope Benedict did, you know, he's trying the best he can with his dial-up connection there at the Vatican. All right, now let's move on into more serious and important news. From the Reuters Wire, a Canadian man who kept exotic cats behind his farmhouse was mauled to death by his own 650-pound pet tiger. A tiger, I said, Alexis. Did you hear that? That's in Canada. Anyway, Norman Buwalda, who's a 66-year-old collector of wild animals, was found dead in the tiger's pen last Sunday out in western Ontario. No, it's not good. It's very bad. The owner of some, let's see here, Troy Carlson, who's a constable for the Ontario Provincial Police, he said the owner of some exotic animals went out to feed the tiger, which was in a cage or a large pen, and the animal attacked him and killed him. Buwalda's family will decide what to do with the tiger. By the way, Reuters tells us that 6 years ago, a Siberian tiger attacked a 10-year-old boy on the same property there in Canada. Now, ladies and gentlemen, if a government can't protect its citizens against human criminals, we certainly can't expect them to protect the average citizen from large cats, predatorial cats like tigers. I mean, if you've listened to the broadcast, you've heard me detail the collapse of the justice systems here in North America, Canada, the United States. It's just despicable what's been happening. But you think that the Canadian government could protect their citizens not only against the average thug criminal, but also against tigers. Got more news from the Wild Kingdom. Coming at you from London, some of the first wild boar to roam free in England for 300 years have been raiding rubbish bins, attacking dogs, and digging up green spaces in villages scattered around England's first national forest park. Wild boar, I said. And for those of you who are public school products, wild boar is both the singular and the plural of boar. Yeah. So if you had one wild pig, it would be a wild boar. If you had two wild pigs, it'd be wild boar. And if you had Barack Obama, Joe Biden, and Al Gore in the same room, it'd be boar. Three boar. Anyway, I don't even know why I tried that. Anyway, these wild boar, they can weigh up to 450 pounds. That's a big pig. Let's see here. Now, boar advocates there in London argue that the boar are indigenous creatures with a right to live in England. They have the right. So wild boar, according to boar advocates, they have a right to life, at least in England. I'd like to survey the boar advocates there and see if they believe children have a right to life in England. But I'm an advocate for people. The boar, they're on their own, in my opinion. Let's see here. The boar. Now, how did these boar get to England, you're wondering? That's as good a question as why are they having tiger attacks in Canada? I don't think there's a lot of tigers in Canada. But anyway, the boar, according to the article from Reuters, were introduced to the Forest of Dean. That's right, the Forest of Dean. When 40 farmed animals, wild boar, escaped from a truck in 2004... And they have swelled in numbers ever since. Wild boar. They're growing faster. That's the only population in England growing faster than the Muslim population. Well, I should use the traditional British pronunciation, the Muslim population. All right. Now, from the rights of boar to live, from the right to life of boar in England, let's move on to personhood here in the United States from WorldNet Daily. The annual March for Life, January 22nd, is coming up, and pro-life groups will use the anniversary to raise the profile of personhood. The term personhood, according to WorldNet Daily, is used by a movement in state legislatures to define unborn babies as persons, affording them the same guaranteed right to life as all other Americans. probably the first definitive statement on the idea came from Justice Harry Blackmun, who wrote the majority opinion for Roe v. Wade, when he said, "If this suggestion of personhood is established, the case for legalized abortion collapses. For the fetus's right to life would then be guaranteed specifically by the 14th Amendment." Note to Harry Blackmun, who I believe currently dwells in the lower depths of hell, if I'm not mistaken. It's actually God who guarantees the right to life of the fetus, but it is codified in law here in the United States by the 14th Amendment. So, legally correct, but missing the point. I'm sure Harry's been reminded of that since he entered hell. I believe that this show is actually broadcast into hell right now. Part of the punishment of all the leftists and Marxists, child killers, deviants and freaks who currently occupy the nether regions. Welcome to the broadcast, Harry. Okay, according to WorldNet Daily, let's see here. No, Sean Kenny, an executive director for American Life League, told WorldNet Daily, quote, "This is the first real movement in 37 years since Roe that has got the abortion lobby on its back foot." Yeah. Well, way to go, American Life League. They're on board. He says, currently, folks are going out and putting referenda or bills in state legislatures that an unborn baby is, in fact, a human being. And Roe v. Wade set the bar for a human being at the moment of birth. And the personhood movement looks to change that. Mr. Kenny says he cited as an accomplishment of the personhood movement, Personhood USA's nomination by one of the nation's leading abortion industry advocates to its 2009 Hall of Shame. Yes, that's for their, that's the National Abortion Rights Action League, NARAL. The Hall of Shame is awarded to those who pose the greatest threat to abortion. And they named Personhood USA to the Hall of Shame. Keith Mason, co-founder of the organization, he said of NARAL's designation, "We at Personhood USA are honored to be considered one of the top four threats to abortion in America." Congratulations, Mr. Mason. Now, I wonder what kind of prize comes along with that. I'm not sure if Mr. Mason will be receiving a million-dollar award from NARAL, similar to Barack Obama's $1 million for the... What award was that he won? You know, I forget the name of it at the moment, but I know it came with $1 million. That I remember. Anyway, I doubt Personhood USA will be getting an endowment from NARAL, but they will be rewarded eternally for having made that list. Congratulations. All right, now let's move from the personhood movement here in the United States over to the antithesis of the personhood movement, the nation of China. China has plenty of problems. And let's just delve in so that you can be educated and enlightened. According to the French press agency, thousands of officials have fled China over the past 30 years with some $50 billion in public funds. They've stolen that money, ladies and gentlemen. As many as 4,000 officials, according to the French press agency, have disappeared using criminal gangs, mainly in the United States and Australia, to launder their ill-gotten gains by real estate and set up false identities. Yeah, that's according to the Global Times out of China. Chinese President Hu Jintao has for years made fighting official corruption a priority, saying that the scourge is a matter of life and death for the ruling Communist Party. And that's really who Hu Jintao is looking out for. He's looking out for the ruling Communist Party. And my question is a simple one. What's to prevent a culture of corruption in an atheist regime? What is it? I mean, why is stealing wrong? I mean, if you throw out the Ten Commandments and you won't even tolerate devout Buddhism, which I think the Buddhists say stealing is wrong, I'd have to look that up. I mean, the communists, they won't tolerate religion in any form or fashion. So it's not surprising to me that their officials abscond with hundreds of thousands, millions of dollars every year, because they're basically an atheistic culture with no foundation to teach that stealing is wrong. Well, let's move on through China. From the Bloomberg Wire, China, this past week, supplanted the U.S. as the world's largest auto market after its 2009 vehicle sales jumped 46%, And China's ascendancy has ended more than a century of American dominance in the auto market that began with the Model T Ford. Now, on its face, you'd think, wow, that's really impressive. The Chinese have supplanted the United States as the largest auto market. But let's do the math together, ladies and gentlemen. There are over 1 billion people in China, and there are just 300 million in the United States. And just now, China has become the largest auto market. So China's way behind the curve. I mean, it's a pretty pathetic effort. They have been growing in leaps and bounds, but that's only because they've crushed their citizenry under a corrupt and atheistic system for the better part of 60 years. So here's my advice to the world. Christianize China, and they will dominate the world for 1,000 years. Don't Christianize China, and they will dominate the globe for 1,000 years. So you do the math on that one. All right, more from Beijing. Police canceled what would have been China's first gay pageant just an hour before it was scheduled to start last Friday. The Mr. Gay China pageant, featuring a fashion show and a host in drag, was set to take place in an upscale nightclub in Beijing, but police arrived and said it could not take place. Yeah. Organizers said that the police told them, there's nothing wrong with what you're doing. There's nothing wrong with that, which means all the homos parading around. There's nothing wrong with that, but you did not do things according to procedure. I guess they didn't get the right permits or do the right paperwork. And so political correctness is alive and well in China as well. Let's see. One of the organizers, Wei Zhongzhang, a judge at the event and host of Queer Comrades, a popular internet talk show on gay issues, he said, "I feel really sad. This was going to be a very good event to show a positive image of gay people." More than 50 journalists were at the club when Zhang announced the pageant was canceled. Hey, where was Anderson Cooper last week? He was in Haiti, that's right. Okay, so Anderson Cooper wasn't there, but more than 50 journalists were very, very disappointed. Let's see. Now, in China, sodomy was decriminalized in 1997, and homosexuality was finally removed from the official list of mental disorders back in 2001. While treatment of gays has improved in recent years, many are still reticent to draw attention to their homosexuality, particularly in the workplace. So it's the opposite of what happens here in the United States. In China, homosexuals are still in the closet. Here in the United States, if homos make you sick and you're repulsed by the idea of all that, you're in the closet at work. So anyway, China is officially atheistic, and without religious reasons for opposing homosexualities, attitudes are slowly shifting among city dwellers from one of intolerance to one of indifference. Homosexuals living in big cities, like nearly all the men participating in the aforementioned pageant that was so tragically canceled, they say their biggest challenge is dealing with parents and deeply ingrained expectations for them to get married and have children. Yeah. I mean, I can imagine. Can you imagine Jing Tao comes home and tells his mom he wants to marry a boy? Of course she's going to be depressed. That's normal. I mean, in any language. Oh, well. So there's the state of China. Well, let's move just a little bit west to San Francisco. A Harvard professor testifying in a case challenging California's homosexual marriage ban said last week that procreation is historically not the only function of marriage. Nancy Cott, a U.S. history professor and the author of a book on marriage as a public institution, disputed a statement by a defense lawyer that states have a compelling interest to restrict marriage to heterosexual couples for the sake of procreation. That's the anti-homosexual marriage argument. That's for the sake of procreation. Now, is that really the reason that marriage is an institution for procreation? Is that really the reason, Mr. Lawyer, whoever your name is? Anyway, this deviant, disgusting pervert testifying on behalf of the homosexuals said that marriage also has served an economic purpose, with each spouse doing different jobs in the partnership. The partnership, she calls it. As the purpose of marriages have changed, the reasons to bar same-sex couples from marrying have gone away, she said. So, a note to the lawyers out in California, without God, the fags will win this argument, okay? Without God, the fags win, okay? Just like over in China, slowly but surely, without God, the fags win. By the way, the case is being heard by U.S. District Judge Vaughn Walker, an appointee of George Herbert Walker Bush, one of those Republican judges that we've all fought so hard to have appointed over the last 30 years. Let's see how that turns out. Francisco, following Beijing, going down all the way. All right. Now let's move to more sane ground. Let's go to the state of Texas. All right. Dateline Austin, Texas, from the Associated Press. The Texas Board of Education tackled high school history last Friday, debating hip-hop. Hip-hop, I said, yes. Now we're talking about American history, and they're debating hip-hop. So already, eyebrows are lifted. Now, they're debating hip-hop and deciding how McCarthyism and immigration would be taught under new standards for teaching social studies that could affect students nationwide. All right, now let's start out with this dateline of Austin, Texas. Austin is considered by most self-respecting Texans as a festering boil on the backside of the great state of Texas, okay? I happen to know that because I grew up in Texas, and I speak some Texan. Although I don't know if I would be given an honorary citizenship there. So out there in Austin, they're debating public school teaching policy, basically social studies, whatever that means. An extended debate apparently flared up there when board member Don McLeroy proposed changing hip-hop to country music in a section covering the impact of cultural movements on American society. His amendment to replace hip-hop with country music failed. So hip-hop won over country music in Texas. Man, that could only happen in Austin. Unbelievable. Now, the only reason I did this story, because I want to tell people a little bit about Texas. If you've never lived there, it's a different place. First of all, people in Texas love the shape of their state. They put the shape of their state on clocks, on ashtrays, on belt buckles, everywhere you go. And I'm not talking about it just at the airport for the tourists. I'm talking about at Walmart where people buy their day. I mean, it's on towels, it's on place settings, it's on curtains, it's on. They have stained glass inserts that you can put with the shape of the great state of Texas. They love the shape of the state of Texas. And I don't really have a problem with that. I think Texas is one of the best-shaped states on the planet. It's got a cool shape. Would you agree, Alexis? Or Alexis has never been to Texas. We'll have to take her down there one of these days. All right, now, when I was in eighth grade in the public school processing factory there in Texas, we were issued at the beginning of the school year two books, one for our American history class and one for our Texas history class. Now, the U.S. history book was standard size, about 8 by 10, and it was about an inch and a half thick. Now, the Texas history book was a full 11 by 14, and it was 3.5 inches thick. And we spent the bulk of the year discussing Texas history. Well, actually, we didn't, at least not me and my friends. We spent the year goofing off, pretty much, wasting our lives there in the public schools down in Texas. Anyway, was there any point to that? I'm not sure if I made a point there. If not, I'm sorry. All right, let's move on into the culture file. Now, every year there's a poll that's taken. Now, it's an unofficial poll, and it's taken here in the McBurney household, rating which media figures should be executed that year. And every year, as all of you well know, at the very top of that list is one Howard Stern. But finishing consistently second to Howard Stern in the unofficial poll here in the McBurney household is Quentin Tarantino. Yeah, and here's an article from the Daily Mail over in London. Quentin Tarantino says he loves violent movies. The Daily Mail tells us the man behind Kill Bill, Pulp Fiction, and Reservoir Dogs said what he wants to see when he goes to the cinema is a man, quote, bleeding like a stuck pig, unquote. Tarantino detailed during a speech at the British Academy of Film and Television how he uses gore to, quote, play his audience, unquote. He says, I feel like a conductor, and the audience's feelings are my instruments. I'll be like, laugh, laugh, now be horrified. He says, when someone does that to me, I've had a good time at the movies. Yeah, Quentin, so did I when I was 13. You know, in between goofing off between American history and Texas history, there in the Texas public school factories when I was 13 years old, I sort of felt that way for like one summer. Quentin apparently just never made it past puberty, at least psychologically. I mean, what would it mean for society if he had literally never made it past puberty? Well, the world would probably be a better place. He says, violence is good. It affects audiences in a big way. So that is the that's the wisdom of one Quentin Tarantino, who, well, he finished second in the poll, but that was before we had read this. Perhaps he would have finished first this year. All right, now let's move on through the culture file. From Phoenix, Arizona, authorities say they've arrested a Mesa, Arizona woman who allegedly tried to trade her 2-year-old daughter for a gun. Yeah, deputies say that Tanya Naru felt that her friend would do a better job raising the child, and she couldn't buy a weapon because she's prohibited to do so by law. So, I mean, she's just trying to solve a problem. You know, I mean, let's face it, folks. How are we to how is the government supposed to tell this woman that what she did was wrong? Is it just because we've written down laws that tell her it's wrong? I mean, we've also written down laws that say if she wanted to kill the child when the child was at 8 months gestation, she could have done that. Here, she's trying to trade the child for a useful tool. Folks, without God, the heathens win the argument every time. So my advice to all of you out there who are concerned for the future of Western civilization and your children is to stop avoiding the topic of the Creator God. He's the only reason that there is right and wrong. He's the only reason we don't live in a survival of the fittest culture. And without him, we will descend into a survival of the fittest, the strong kill the weak culture. That's what we will descend into if we keep avoiding the subject of God. So just cut it out, okay? Don't be afraid. All right, now let's move on to Haiti. The aforementioned jumping Joe Biden had some words to say about Haiti this week. He said he told Haitian American and political leaders last Saturday in Miami that President Barry Ho, quote, does not view this as a humanitarian mission with a life cycle of a month. Well, Joe, you might want to, you know, life cycle may not have been the appropriate phraseology to use when addressing the death of possibly 200,000 people, okay? Just, you know, note to Joe. But can you imagine if hanging around with Joe Biden can lower your IQ by 10 points an hour? Can you imagine what's happening to Joe Biden himself? Yeah. Anyway, I'm going to give my Haiti theory. Okay, here's how we solve the problem in Haiti, and you can take it for what it's worth. Now, Haiti is divided into six subdivisions, six states, so to speak. So what we want to do is we want to designate six Christian officers, preferably from the United States Marine Corps, but I'm willing to discuss that. I'm not going to be dogmatic. Could be from the Army. Could be from the Navy. Air Force, pretty much out of the question. I doubt you can find six Christian officers. I doubt you can find six Christian officers in the Air Force. So that's the only point I'm not willing to give on. But six Christian officers from the U.S. military, they need to be assigned to a state there, and their job would be to identify and supply indigenous Christian leaders to repair Haiti. As rebuilding takes place, our military Christian officers would appoint these indigenous leaders to the government. And they scrap any democracy whatsoever and install the top leader, the top performer, to head a constitutional monarchy, a hereditary constitutional monarch. And I think the investment would pay off with future trade and whatnot. And we'd solve that whole voodoo problem down there, you know? Because the biggest problem down there next to next to the earthquake is all that voodoo, the chicken blood and all that. It's very disturbing. Anyway, I had an email from a listener, and unfortunately I didn't print it out, but he said if we stay down there and do the right thing, we could make Haiti more beautiful than Hawaii. And I agree. And it would pay off in the long run. So there's my Haiti theory. Take it for what it's worth. All right. Now let's move from one collapsed, corrupt government and society to another. Dateline Washington, D.C. From the Bloomberg Wire, even if Democrats lose the January 19th special election to pick a new Massachusetts senator, Congress may still pass a health care bill overhaul by using a process called reconciliation. That procedure requires only 51 votes. So this is a prediction I made several months ago right on this show that the Democrats, facing public outcry and resistance to their communization of our healthcare system, what's left of the free market in healthcare, they will use what has been called the nuclear option, sneaking this in through reconciliation requiring only 51 votes. They will do it. That's my bold prediction for the week. All right, let's see here. Christy Van Hollen of Maryland, chairman of the Democratic Congressional Committee, said even before Massachusetts and that race was on the radar screen, we prepared for the process of using reconciliation. The procedure, by the way, is designed to pass unpopular tax increases and spending cuts. And so they're gonna do it. I mean, the deal is done. The die is cast, ladies and gentlemen. The communist, pinko, progressive socialists are not going to let this opportunity slip away. And believe me, they see it slipping away. Despite the fact that the dirtbag in Massachusetts is basically a Democrat. He's a socialist. He's pro-abortion. He's pro-socialized medicine. And how any of you suckers out there could give money to this guy thinking that he's going to save the Republican Party and thus the Republic proves that so-called conservatives are just ready to be lied to again. They're just ready to be screwed politically once again. So thank you very much to all the conservative talk show hosts who are lauding Scott Brown as the savior of the Republic. Thank you very much. We really appreciate that. We'll keep track of what that guy does for the next 6 years. Should he win? And by the way, I don't think he will. No, I don't think that the... I don't think the Democrat machine in Massachusetts is going to allow that to happen. I'm sorry. Anyway, Pat Buchanan said on WorldNet Daily this past week, he asked the question, is America's financial collapse inevitable?
No.
Inevitable, I said. Yes. He said if taxes are off the table, because he posits in his column that raising taxes is simply going to be too unpopular. And leaving Afghanistan is not an option in Iraq. So he says if taxes are off the table, Afghan war costs are inexorably rising, and cuts in Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid, and entitlement programs are politically impossible, as pressure builds for a second stimulus, how does one reduce a deficit of $1.4 trillion? How does one stop the exploding national debt from surging above 100% of GDP? What the looming financial crisis of this country portends, according to Pat Buchanan, is nothing less than a test of whether this democratic republic is sustainable. And Pat, you're hitting all around the bullseye. But for the past 50 years, Republicans and conservatives have avoided the topic that our rights come from God. And when you leave God out of the equation, the heathens win. Western Worldview. We're rounded third and headed for home. I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Let's move into the war file. Al-Qaeda has threatened to kill French hostages in Mali. The Islamic Maghreb made its demand in a statement last Sunday. The Frenchman Pierre Camet was kidnapped from a hotel in Mali back in November 2009. The Islamic Maghreb says, "Let France and Mali be forewarned that we give 20 days to fulfill our just demand, or the two governments shall be fully responsible for the life of the French hostage." In June, this same group executed a British man after the British government did not give in to its demands to release Abu Qatada, a Jordanian considered to be Osama bin Laden's right-hand man in Europe. I think that we need to get these people lawyers. Yes. That's what we need. We need to, or maybe we should try to arrest them and read them their Miranda rights. Dateline Redmond, Virginia. Two Navy SEALs accused in the mistreatment of an Iraqi detainee will be tried in a U.S. military court in Iraq. A military judge moved the courts martial of Petty Officer 2nd Class Jonathan Keefe and Petty Officer 1st Class Julio Huertas to Camp Victory, the site of the alleged abuse. I mean, this is just insanity. We're going to bring the terrorists to the cities they bombed, and we're going to bring our guys to the city where they terrorized the terrorists for trials. It's insanity. Now, what did these two men do? These two petty officers? Keith and Huertas are accused of trying to cover up after a third SEAL punched an Iraqi suspected in an ambush that killed four U.S. security contractors. They punched him. It's just upside down. How we win this war is beyond me. How does that happen? I mean, it's not just about sheer military power and might. It's also about the will of the soldier on the ground. And it would seem to me that the U.S. military and the Congress and the executive branch of the government is doing all they can to break the will of our soldiers. Maybe we need soldiers without any will. Dateline Tel Aviv, Israel is developing an army of robotic fighting machines that offers a window onto the future, potential future of warfare. This is from the Wall Street Journal. 60 years of near constant war and its high-tech industry have long made Israel one of the world's leading innovators of military robotics. Yeah, the item they're talking about here is called the Guardian. The Guardian is an unmanned ground vehicle which now drives itself along the Gaza and Lebanese borders. The Guardian is essentially an armored off-road golf cart with a suite of optical sensors and surveillance gear. What, no guns? Okay. Doesn't say there's any guns. I would put some guns on it, for crying out loud. Anyway, maybe that's what we need. But then again, I guess the kids controlling the joysticks are going to have the will to fight. Or maybe not. I don't know. Anyway, Dateline Hampton, Virginia, as the U.S. military rushes to place more spy drones over Afghanistan, the remote-controlled planes are producing so much video intelligence that analysts are finding it more and more difficult to keep up. They say right now they've got 24 years worth of video, if it was watched continuously. And that volume is expected to multiply in the coming years as drones are added to the fleet and some start using multiple cameras to shoot in many directions. I mean, the technology is awesome. Hey, and there's a lot of people out there looking for jobs. I mean, set them up to have them start watching this video. Can you imagine? Young guys out of work, tell them you could get paid to watch TV. It's like every teenage boy's dream job. You know, and then they could graduate to actually operating the joystick and zapping the bad guys. I mean, it sounds like fun work if you can get it. All right, now let's move into the justice file. Into the justice file. Dateline, Huntsville, Texas. We always love that dateline. Convicted killer Gary Johnson was executed last Tuesday for fatally shooting a ranch foreman and another man who interrupted his burglary of a southeast Texas ranch nearly 24 years ago. This 59-year-old murderer was the second inmate to receive lethal injection this year in the great state of Texas that executes the most prisoners. At least six others, according to the Associated Press, have dates with death coming up soon. Now, this particular dirtbag murderer was convicted for the April 1986 slaying of James Hazleton. April of 1986! I mean, I'll tell you how long ago that was. I was spending my last year goofing off in the Texas Department of Education public school system. back in 1986. James Hazleton was killed. His brother-in-law, Peter Sparagano, was murdered. They were gunned down while investigating a call from a neighbor who said that a truck had driven through the gate at the Triple Creek Ranch, 10 miles west of Huntsville. The murderer declined the warden's offer to make a final statement, but then he blurted out, "Just tell my family goodbye. I've never done anything in my life to anybody." So here's a fellow who's definitely in hell. Terry Johnson, who was also involved in the murder, he took a plea deal with a 99-year prison term. Johnson went to trial and was sentenced to death. So even Texas will take a ransom for a murder. They give this Terry Johnson 99 years. So a memo to the Texas Department of Justice from the book of Numbers, the 35th chapter. Warning, 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 Will Robinson, there are Bible verses up ahead for those in the audience who advocate pluralism and diversity. We know here at the Weekly Worldview that you would not tolerate anyone who would ever dare quote a Bible verse in public. So this warning gives you fair notice that raw, unadulterated truth is about to be uttered. Numbers, from the 35th chapter, "You shall take no ransom for the life of a murderer." Let's move on into the justice file. Dateline McAllister, Oklahoma. Oklahoma has executed a man for the 1993 beating deaths of his ex-girlfriend's daughter and grandchild. Julius Ricardo Young was executed by lethal injection last Thursday at Oklahoma State Penitentiary there in beautiful McAllister, Oklahoma. Young was convicted of first-degree murder in the slayings of Joylyn Morgan and her son Kawan, whose bodies were found in 1993 in their Tulsa apartment. Young was upset that Morgan's mother ended their relationship, so he broke into the apartment and beat the two to death with a baseball bat, which was horrifyingly painful, traumatic death. Young was executed by lethal injection, so he had a relatively serene death, at least until he met his judge and the creator of the universe. Young maintained his innocence. Yeah, right up until he met Jesus. Yeah. Who ground him to powder and sent him straight to hell. All right. Let's see here. Dateline Tyler, Texas. A defense attorney says a teenager accused in the stabbing death of a Texas high school teacher will get mental health treatment after being declared unfit to proceed in the justice system. The youth will get 90 days of treatment before another hearing to determine his mental fitness for legal proceedings. By the way, he stabbed 50-year-old Todd R. Henry to death September 23rd of last year in the classroom there at John Tyler High School. That's not a very heinous crime. You know, let's find out how the boy is feeling. More from the justice file. The most creatively ridiculous sentence of the week. Right here from Palmer, Alaska. An Alaska man who killed his father with a machete and attacked his dad's fiancée was given a 189-year sentence for murder and attempted murder. Christopher Aaron Rogers apologized at last Monday's sentencing. The machete attack was the first part of a spree in which Rogers also shot three strangers in Anchorage, killing one and injuring two. For that, he was given a 309-year sentence back in November. Creatively ridiculous sentencing in the formerly great state of Alaska. From the domestic tranquility file, Dateline Berea, Ohio, a 65-year-old man apparently drove through the Cleveland suburbs and randomly shot at moving cars several times over the span of 4 months. Paul Hausman is suspected of shooting at vehicles between August and December last year. No motive is known. Hausman was arrested last Tuesday, and charged with felony assault and carrying concealed weapons. How is he not charged with attempted murder? He's shooting at cars, for crying out loud. Unbelievable. Let's see. From the domestic tranquility file, Dateline Minneapolis. Minneapolis, Minnesota, I said. Prosecutors have charged two 17-year-old boys with murder in the shooting of three men during a botched robbery at a Minneapolis corner. A botched robbery. What does that mean, a botched robbery? Now, botched indicates that something went wrong. Now, if people are robbing a store, something's already gone wrong. As if the robbery hadn't been botched and the murder hadn't taken place, well, things would just be dandy there in Minneapolis. Anyway, that's the Associated Press. That's what journalism school is producing. Prosecutors charged Mahdi Hassan Ali and Ahmed Shire Ali with three counts of first-degree murder last Thursday. Surveillance camera footage and a criminal complaint indicate that Mahdi Ali shot all three of the murder victims. Ahmed Ali told police that they had intended only to rob the store. Now, Minnesota law states that if murder is committed during the commission of a felony, all parties to that felony are liable for the deaths, even if only one person pulled the trigger. Liable? Liable? What does that mean? They're liable for the deaths? That's legalese. They're guilty of the murders if they're convicted. And folks, we've got surveillance camera footage. I mean, that should make for a pretty short trial, wouldn't you think? We've got them on tape, for crying out loud. But what are the odds that they'll be quickly and painfully put to death so as to set an example for other punks out there who are thinking about robbing stores with guns and possibly murdering people? Well, there's no chance whatsoever that that's going to happen, frankly, and it's just sad. Dateline Spencer, Massachusetts. Authorities say a husband and wife have been found shot to death in an apparent murder-suicide at a burning Massachusetts home. A horse, suffering from several gunshot wounds, was also discovered in a barn on the property. 69-year-old Michael Curry was found with a gunshot wound in the doorway of his home. He was taken to hospital in Worcester, where he was pronounced dead. His wife, 66-year-old Joyce Curry, was also found dead with a gunshot wound in the bedroom of the home. The horse, according to the Associated Press, the horse was taken to Tufts University School of Veterinary Medicine in Grafton and is being evaluated. There was no immediate word on its condition. Why are they reporting about the horse in this story? Maybe it's just me, but I just don't get that. Is he a suspect? I mean, they say at the beginning of the story it's an apparent murder-suicide, so we're not sure. Perhaps the horse was involved in some way, and that's why they found it necessary to report on the condition of the horse after discovering the horrifying scene of a man apparently shooting his wife and then to death and then killing himself. It's just bizarre to me. I just don't understand. Can I do any more of this domestic tranquility? I tell you, it gets you down after a while. A 20-year-old Detroit woman, according to the Associated Press, who police say had a strained relationship with her mother, is accused of taking her 22-year-old boyfriend into a... talking her 22-year-old boyfriend into shooting her mother to death. Devonna Hines and Antoine Perkins are charged with murder in the slaying of 41-year-old Kathy Hines. A strained relationship. You know, in years gone by, that would have led to some nasty letters exchanged, perhaps a physical confrontation, and the daughter would have moved away, and the mother would have disowned her, and that would have been sad. But that's in years gone by. Now it ends in murder. Why? Because the law has... You know, you've heard the saying, the law is an ass? Well, the law has become not only an ass, but the law has become the impetus of murder, because there is no justice. And when you leave God out of the equation, murder wins in the minds, in the weak mind of a potential criminal. Dateline New York, a famed strongman who once lifted 3,200 pounds at Coney Island and was 104 years old, died last Monday after being hit by a minivan. A minivan, I said. Joe Rolino was struck as he crossed Bay Bridge Parkway in Brooklyn. He was the model of health, according to his friends. He was a vegetarian. He didn't drink. He didn't smoke. He exercised every day. He was a lifetime boxer, part of the old-time Barbell and Strongmen Association, and could rip a book at the seam. He would rip a book apart at the seam. Wow. He was a decorated World War II veteran, and he got his start as a strongman in the 1920s at the Coney Island Carnival, and he billed himself as the world's strongest man. And all I can think of as he's standing at the pearly gates, maybe in line with some other people who have recently arrived, all I can imagine is they're asking him, a minivan? A minivan? Man, that's embarrassing. I'm glad I don't have to tell that story. All right, that's the worldview for this week, ladies and gentlemen. I will be back with you next week. I want to thank KGOV. By the way, I was on the radio all week in Denver. You can hear it all at KGOV.com. Denver Bible Church, Personhood USA, Personhood Colorado, American Right to Life, Theology Online, and of course my other brother Daryl, who makes it all happen here at the Weekly Worldview Studios. I'll be back with you next week. Until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.